Welcome to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast with founders Stan Campbell and Mike Darter. If you're forced to fight the battle for your life, CCW Safe will fight the battle for your future.
Welcome back to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast. I'm Mike Darter in Oklahoma City.
I'm Stan Campbell in Los Angeles.
Oh, Stan, is that a... What kind of voice is that?
I call it my Peter Brady.
Your Peter Brady
voice. Yeah, yeah.
At first, no, I thought you had a 900 voice going on there for a minute.
No, I just got back. We all just got back from Colorado, and I don't know. I mean, the brother's not used to, you know, being up that high in the mountains, 8,000 miles above sea level, and it was cold up there. I mean, in the middle of May, it was freezing.
And it's snowing.
And snowing. I don't know. I was just not used to it. So now I'm nursing a chest cold. So you're going to have to talk for me.
You're going to have to start hitting the hot tea.
I'm on it right now, sir. I'm on it right now.
Look at that. You got your hot tea in hand, huh?
Yes,
you put a little honey in that?
I got a little honey in it.
What else you got in that tea, Stan?
That's it, sir. That's it. I'm working. Yeah.
All right. Well, what's the weather like in LA?
The weather is pretty. It's really hot now. I mean, it's here in the valley. It starts off 92 in the morning, and it's about 105 degrees. It feels like. I'm sure. You know, our guest Justin. You know, he's kind of used to weather like that coming from Vegas. But I don't know. I just like it to be perfect. It's just not that way.
It's like 77 here. It's pretty perfect. We're normally awesome. Not like that. So Justin Collett, what's that?
Yeah. Hey, before you bring in Justin, tell the people about the new mascot.
Oh, man. You know what? The mascot, Flint Biggie. Flint Biggie is going to be, he will grace the cover of this week's podcast.
I love it.
So got a new pup, and it's going to be the office mascot. I got an 8-week-old French bulldog.
Oh,
and so I've always had, I want to bring Justin in right quick because he's a dog guy. So we have Justin Collett on. He's also here in Oklahoma City at our home office. Justin, great to have you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Justin.
Before we talk about the mascot, I just want to say that, you know, Justin has been working with us for several years doing video, doing some marketing stuff, doing just kind of some various stuff, things for us. And Stan and I had really started talking about a year ago about trying to bring him on full time. And as a CEO of a company, and I think Stan can say COO, when you bring somebody into your mix that is an outstanding choice, it does, it makes you feel really good. And it also does great things for your company internally and externally. And I feel that Justin was just a great hire. He's done amazing work already. And I think not only, you know, we're going to see it internally, which we already have, but externally also, I think a lot of our members are going to see his value as well.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Mike. So, I appreciate it, man. I've had a great time, especially since I've been here in Oklahoma City full time with you guys. That's I'm excited. I'm looking forward to the future.
Good. And, you know, Justin is a gun guy. He knows way more than I know in the gun industry and with firearms. I mean, I was a police officer for 10 years on the street, 20 years in law enforcement. I've been around guns. I've worked, you know, investigative gun crimes. I've grown up with shotguns, but he is a gun guy. There's different, like Larry is a gun guy.
Yeah.
Justin's definitely a gun guy, but Justin's also, I mean, he does great video work, photo work. We have a lot in common because of that, but he's also a dog guy. So And Justin, let me hear your description of this dog, Justin.
He's an 8-week-old French bulldog, quite possibly the cutest creature ever created. I mean, he's amazing. I've not really had too much interaction with too many Frenchies, but the few that I've met have all been awesome. I like that they're laid back. I've got more experience with like working breeds, Shepherds or like a Beauceron, some Rots. But so it's a whole different vibe with those dogs than it is with a Frenchie. But I can't wait till he's big enough to just be around the office and hang out, because it's going to be really cool. It's a beautiful dog.
Well, meanwhile, he is available for hire for any single guys who want to take him out of the state, like wherever they want to go. Because everywhere I've gone, you get stopped constantly with this dog. It's cool. It's a blue and tan. You'll see a picture of it. I put a picture on this post, but it's blue and tan. We got a picture of him when I got him. I was driving back with my daughter from Tulsa and had him, and we went straight to the office. Justin had a full setup. We got a picture with the tie on. I think we should put Flint Biggie 2020, post him all over there. The only logical choice.
More about the Frenchie game than I do. The blue French bulldogs, it's hard to find like French bulldogs anyway, but the blue ones, they have like a bluish gray coat, they're even rarer, right?
Yeah, and this is a blue and tan. And, so I don't know much about Frenchies. Other than I've always had labs. I duck hunted. I used to train labs for duck hunting. I had 3 labs. I had a black, a yellow, and a chocolate at one time. I've had, right now, I have 3 Great Pyrenees, which those are huge dogs. Those are working dogs. 2 of them are at the barn. So I've also been more familiar with the working breeds, bigger breeds, but I've always, I always thought, even into my adulthood, if I ever get a small dog, it's probably going to be a French bulldog. But just because there's something about them that is just cool. I mean, they're like little clowns, you know, mm-hmm. They're laid back and they're super light. So I started looking. And of course, you know, my daughters are like, oh, get a mini, get a little toy, you know, and those things, you know, kind of looked at them. Those things are like, it's like a car, you know, cost wise. I'm like, no way. And so I kind of started looking around, talked to some people who I knew who had them. They loved them. You know, everybody I talked to said they're the greatest dogs. And then I came across one person who had one, and they had said if they ever got another one, they would get it from this lady in Tulsa, and she gave me the site. And I went to her site, and it's French. It's Buffalo Run French Bulldogs on Facebook. And you go to this site, and she has like a whole litter of these blue and tans. And it's kind of like a grayish blue coat, and he's got tan feet, a tan belly, and he's got tan markings on his face. Just a super cool, you know, look. Now, she had reds that were not red, but they're kind of a brown. And she had, I think, a white, 1 or 2 white ones. But yeah, this blue French or the blue and tan is pretty cool. And they're just super cool dogs. I mean, I've always, you know, the lab, you got to freaking take a 2x4 and discipline a lab with it, because they're just so hard headed and they're just crazy spastic. Some labs can be like, you know, my yellow and my chocolate was more laid back. My black one was just crazy. So to have a dog like this who just, I mean, like he's in my office now just sleeping the whole time. Of course, it's a pup and they're gonna sleep a lot, but
yeah,
he's just super chill, man. I mean, been home 3 nights now and he slept all the way through the night. You know, I was like, wow, this is different having a pup. You know, thought it'd be up all night, but anyways, yeah. So we're gonna start posting some stuff with Flint Biggie, and it's gonna be kind of cool to have an office mascot, and you know, just something. There's a lot of people are dog people out there, and just something that has a, you know, a common interest.
Yeah,
So
you know, it's amazing how many gun people are dog people. And I really believe it's because of, you know, how loyal dogs are. And, you know, I mean, speaking of that, you know, segue into, you know, we have a new loyalty program coming out, right, Mike?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, we do. It's brand new. We've been working on it for quite a while. And it's added now to our site. So if you're a current member, on the CCW Safe navigation, now there is a, under membership, there's a link for rewards. And if you go there, you have to opt into it. So you go to rewards. I think it's going to ask you for your date of birth if it doesn't already have it, and it's going to have you sign up for that. And then once you sign up for that, then you're kicked into the rewards kind of part of our website, which is all kinds of stuff. So you can get, you know, mention us, mention CCW Safe on Twitter using, you know, hashtag or @ and earn 5 points that can be redeemed. Some of them have dates that you, that are set by date. So you have to do it by a certain date. You can follow on Twitter, membership renewal. Every time you membership, you're going to earn 55 points. If you subscribe to the podcast, you're going to earn 5 points. HR2APT, all the membership plans have points. Like the ultimate membership, you're going to earn 100 points. Follow on Instagram. So they have all these different ways. Complete a questionnaire. There's going to be some questionnaires that we can really kind of get to kind of know our members more and really target what they want out of it. You know, I think a lot of times as companies, you have an idea what you want to provide and what your members want or need. And then that becomes just what they need and want. And that becomes just what you do. And I think this is going to be, you know, a better way for us to communicate with some of our members. So there's a lot of things that, and the questionnaires, you know, like talked about before, the questionnaires are going to be very helpful for us. So, so yeah, that's a good addition. And that's something
really that is
out now. So like I said, if you go to the navigation on the CCW Safe site, you're going to see under the membership, there's a new entry for rewards. And when you click on that, it's going to have you log in. If you're not a member, you have to log in. But once you log in and go through the process, then you'll see how you can earn the rewards. So, and in the future, it's going to be, you know, what we want to do is be able to tie this into merchandise, t-shirts, coffee mugs, the courses on the academy. In the future, that's our goal, is to do that. And it may take some time, but at least we got it started and it's up. So
that's awesome. And then, you know, the thing about it, I mean, there's, you know, hundreds of members that contact us, you know, over the year, you know, which, you know, they talk about, you know, referring a friend. And, you know, that's the importance of, you know, community and really the way we treat our members as family, you know, that they absolutely want to help us grow and to talk to our, you know, our new members and invite new members in that they're friends and family with that actually support, you know, guns and, you know, carrying concealed and they also want them protected. And, you know, we love interacting. It gives us another way to interact with our members. It gives us another way to, you know, make sure that everybody is taking advantage of, you know, all of the learning tools that we provide with the academy and such. So, I mean, all that stuff is just great and we're happy about it.
So today we're also going to talk about a few other things, and we're going to talk about some of the things that are really in Justin's wheelhouse and some in mine as well with history. But Justin, where do you want to start today?
Something that I've found interesting, I was talking to one of our members earlier this week, and he was the guy that, like, you know, you want every member to be like. He was super nice guy, switched on, but he was talking about going and taking some training from John Murphy in Virginia, I believe. And it's FPF training is the name, and we're not affiliated with this guy. I actually had stumbled across some of his videos on YouTube, and he does some classroom PowerPoint presentations about some of the concealed carry issues that to me are really interesting. Mm-hmm. And that is things like, you know, when do you get involved? And if something's going down and you have your family with you, do you get involved? If mm-hmm. it's just you and you see something on the side of the street, do you get involved? And his presentation was really interesting because I've seen some instructors kind of let ego guide them when they do these kind of things. He was very straightforward and maybe I like it because it kind of aligns with what I believe in. And that is that every person is different. Every person has a different risk tolerance. Every person has different capabilities. Every situation is different. So it was interesting. And his whole point being was it benefits you to kind of not make a decision beforehand, but kind of decide, you know, what risk profile you're willing to accept, and kind of prepare your mind ahead of time. So if you ever are faced with that decision, you know, it can hopefully make, you know, help you make a better decision. The other thing is there was no judging, which I'm proud, you know, I agree with, and that, you know, it's not for anyone else to say what someone else should do in mm-hmm. a situation. And then he gave basically three different risk profiles. You know, the guy who's going to charge in and save the day no matter what. Mm-hmm. The guy who is not going to get involved at all if it doesn't directly impact him. And then somewhere in the middle. But and there are different risks to all of those. But I don't know. I said all that to kind of say that it's interesting to me that we are seeing more and more trainers focusing on not only the CCW market, but kind of the aftermath, kind mm-hmm. of, and the mindset that's going to be required before you go into, you know, these situations. That the mm-hmm. more you think about it before something happens, you know, chances are the better off you're going to be. But it's just I've always followed the training market. I've trained with some guys, you know, some of the bigger name trainers. But it's interesting to me to watch that market and how it's kind of progressed from when, you know, back before the Magpul videos, back when mm-hmm. the only training was like at Blackwater or Gunsight or Mid-South or some of those, you know, facilities that were around before the internet mm-hmm. to the rise of kind of the celebrity gun trainer that we're living in now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we went through that period of, if you said you were going to go take training, everybody thought you were going to put on a plate carrier and run around with an AR-15. That's kind of, it's changed now to where it's more realistic pistol-based classes for concealed carriers, mm-hmm. you know, stuff that guys are actually going to use. And to me, that's kind of been led by guys like Kyle DeFore and some of the other guys who it's much more practical for normal human beings to go take 3 days of how to shake out your gear and how to engage with the Glock 19 or the Glock 43 or the SIG 365, whatever you carry day to day, than it is to go out and, you know, run around shooting through cars and stuff when you're an accountant. So,
right.
It's just, to me, that's interesting. And then guys like what Murphy are doing with the aftermath type of thing.
Yeah, I've seen a big increase in the aftermath over the last few years. And I think there's a lot more practical versus tactical now.
Well, even in the, it's interesting, and this video will eventually be released. We did an interview where Larry Vickers was interviewing Ken Hackathorn.
Oh, yeah.
And they were talking about how the market is changing and things like that for trainers. And Larry said that the rifle stuff has really died out a lot, a lot. It's all pistols now, and it's all concealed carry and handgun stuff. And it's kind of like people kind of got the, you know, tactical Timmy stuff out of their system a little bit, and now focusing more on EDC type skills.
Yeah, nobody wants to be tactical Timmy. Yeah, you know, the thing about that, you know, I looked at, you know, a lot of the what's listed on his website about who he's trained under. And Jeff Gonzalez, who's a friend to CCW Safe, Andrew Pranka, and then even some who are, you know, who we just respect, you know, like Tom Gibbons and Masad Ayub, you know, I mean,
Andrew Bronca.
Yeah. I mean, he's really, you know, has trained under a lot of great instructors across the nation.
Like Mike Green of Green Ops, I've actually trained with Mike. It was years before he actually kind of came out and hit the market, so to say. But he's an excellent guy. I mean, Mike Green, if you get a chance to do anything with him, he's a very switched on cat that has got an impeccable resume.
I was wondering what you're about to say there when you said he finally came out, and then there was a pause. Well, and then it's like, hit the market.
The chance that I got to train with him, he was still working for government agencies. So yeah. it wasn't, nobody got to take any photos. It was kind of some secret squirrel stuff, but he was doing some training for a friend of mine, and I was fortunate enough to be able to be around it. But at that time, he was not making it known, you know, to the public that he was doing, you know, that he was even out there doing that stuff. But
where is he based out of?
Virginia.
Okay.
And
now, are you talking about Mike Green, or are you talking
Mike
about
Green is based out of Virginia? Okay. And I believe they're both out of Virginia. I believe Murphy's out of Virginia as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's cool to see. And I've talked to Larry about this as well, and others, because everybody's kind of saying the same thing, that there has definitely been a shift. And I wonder, do you have any guesses to why that shift?
I think because that segment of the market, I think it had to do kind of with the sign of the times.
Mm-hmm.
I personally believe that as far as the training industry goes, there's almost you know, we have BC and AD. Well, there's a before Magpul and there's an after Magpul. Before those videos hit, because I was shooting USPSA in the mid 90s. Mm-hmm. I remember when Todd Jarrett went down to teach at Blackwater in the 90s. Remember, this is all pre GWAT, you know, pre 9/11. That was kind of a big deal. And the idea of the PMC and contractors and all that kind of stuff, nobody had even thought of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the M4, you know, the AR platform back then, you know, you had guys shooting high power. You know, we were still kind of in the heart of the Brady deal. So the AR was nothing like it is now. You didn't really see many of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's my mind, that's my base of where I'm coming from. And I'm kind of saying this about the change is you had places like Mid-South where civilians could still go to Mid-South back then. You can't now. You know, you had Gunsight, of course, with Jeff Cooper. And then you had, Blackwater opened up and we're doing some classes. And then after 9/11, it just, you know, exploded. And then about, I guess it was it 03, 04, I think the Magpul stuff came out, maybe a little later, the first one.
Yeah.
But they made it, and a lot of that was the production quality, the way it was filmed, is they made it, I mean, not, it's an overused word now, but they made it look dynamic, and they made it look fun, and they made it look really cool. So they did that. If you look at any of the videos prior to that, it was one guy with one camera, and it was just, it was horrible production quality. Some of the information was great, but the production quality was terrible. Well, Magpul, those videos, along with, you know, the AR platform becoming more and more widespread, they made it cool. And so now you had people who otherwise probably never would have considered going out and paying to have some guy run them through up drills for 2 days with an AR-15 and teach them basic stuff like how to clear malfunctions, how to zero the rifle, things like that. A lot of people who never would have considered that, you know, after seeing that video and that culture that kind of started to build behind it, now you had a lot of guys that, you know, they were heavy into the gear. It was literally a lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, and you had that culture build up. And so you had demand for trainers, and guys out there saw that they could, you know, saw that they could make money filling these carbine classes. And so they did it. And I think it was just, I don't want to call it a fad, but, you know, I think that thing lasted about 10 years. And now we're on to the next thing, which is, you know, thankfully, in my opinion, pretty more practical, which is, you know, EDC type stuff, concealed carry, pistols, handguns. And now the newest thing that I'm seeing, which is interesting to me, and it's something that Hackathon kind of ridiculed a little bit, which I found interesting, was we're seeing these classes where people are shooting B8 bullseye targets at 25 yards. And, you know, there's really no better way to learn and understand the fundamentals of handgun marksmanship than shooting bullseye. But it's just interesting how much it's swung from, you know, used to you go out and you shoot a 1,000-round pistol class and you never fired a target over 7 yards away and you were trying to shoot as fast as you can and do it from retention and all this John Wick stuff. And now we're seeing guys back it out and saying, no, I want to see if you can fire 10 rounds in an 8-inch circle at 25 yards in 20 seconds. Because, you know, the theory being if you have your fundamentals at that level, it's kind of always easier to go faster and shoot a bigger group. But being able to have your fundamentals at that tight to where you can do that. But that's kind of where the industry is going right now for some people. And then you've always got guys like Clint at Thunder Ranch that's running his programs that he's ran for years that are still awesome. But just, yeah, the whole training industry is really interesting. In my opinion, how it's how it came up, where it came from, the changes it went through, where we are now. And then, you know, like going back to the 25 yard deal, Hackathon kind of said in his interview with Larry, he mentioned that, you know, that's all cool and good, but, you know, your average handgun encounter is what, under five or seven yards in the dark, you know, and you're going to fire, you know, five rounds.
But, well,
so it's interesting, the trainers, their mindsets, the newer guys, their mindsets, everyone's experiences and how we see, because we always see, I mean, if you would have told me 7 years ago that guys are paying, you know, ex soft guys to go out and shoot B8s at 25 yards, I would have told you you're crazy.
Yeah.
But, so it's just funny how it comes around.
There's, I think too, and first of all, I was going to say, like back in the early 90s, you know, as a police officer, we're talking about ARs and that, you know, we didn't have, I mean, everybody had your pistol and you had a shotgun and that was it. Even, I mean, AR training really in law enforcement hasn't come along until the last, what, 10, 15 years, Stan? And even within the last 10 years, a lot of departments
yeah, correct.
Didn't start issuing out ARs until just more recent than that.
But you know, I think the turning point was the North Hollywood shooting with the bank robbers, where officers, you know, departments started to issue, weapons that can actually handle something like that.
But even that took years to filter out across the nation.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, being here in Oklahoma City, it took a lot longer for that to filter down. But one of the things I see too, and I'll be the first to admit, I'm not a firearms instructor. I was a custody and control instructor. Never was a firearm instructor. I have been involved in a shooting personally, have been involved in other officers involved shootings on department, worked shootings, not directly with the overseeing the investigation, but in investigations with officer involves. And I do think that, you know, prefacing that I'm not speaking as an authority here, but I do think that there's other societal changes that can modify that as well. For example, you know, a lot of people say that, if you're even a police officer or a concealed carry, you're most likely, if you are ever to be involved in the shooting, it's going to be at very close range, it's going to be very quick, and it's going to be over. However, what's the biggest fear of people today? My biggest fear is that my three girls go to a Christian school that is, school that's on a location that would be a very easy target. And you see these mass shootings and you have all this run, hide, fight training, and you have all these training going on. Really, the biggest fear of me is not getting involved. I mean, I carry almost all the time, but that's not my biggest fear. You know, my biggest fear is that there's going to be a mass shooting somewhere. And that's when you get into the 25-yard training, you know, and I think that because we've had so many of these, and, you know, they trigger, you know, we've seen the political, you know, absurdity that is triggered off of these. And I think it also triggers, and I think that is one thing that people are thinking now in training as well. I mean,
to me, like the longer range pistol classes, I mean, I believe that more capabilities are always better, and I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. I enjoy, and to me, it's, if you want to see where you're at, go out and shoot those 25, 50 yard shots. Mm-hmm. It will show you instantly how good your fundamentals are or are not.
Yeah.
And the argument I've seen made, and one I agree with, when people say, you know, oh, well, you shouldn't be shooting at 50 yards with a handgun. Mm-hmm. I would say, okay, walk into any commercial building, walk into Walmart or a Costco, and, you know, look down the aisle from the front to the back. How far is that? Or a hallway, you know, hell, even in some homes, you know, I mean, it can be long. But I see both sides. I always try to kind of pay attention to what people are saying and try to pick out kind of what makes sense to me. But the argument against that 50-yard stuff is, well, you'll have people say, if you're a private citizen and you shoot somebody that's 50 yards away from you, how do you justify
that? How are you
The only way you could justify that is an active shooter that's, of course, going around shooting people.
Yeah.
Sure, that's a justification. Mm. But it's, you know, I see where that's coming from. But
yeah,
to me, it's just the whole thing's just interesting to me is, you know, you see these things rise up out of, you know, seemingly out of nowhere, these concepts. And then there's always a pushback to that concept. And then after all that resolves, you move forward a little bit. And now there's something now new is taken as truth where it wasn't before. And, you know, those truths always kind of seem to evolve and change. And before you know it, you're right back where you started 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So just interesting. Well,
there's a couple things you said I think that is important. You talk about shooting at 25 or 50 and you see where your fundamentals are. And that's one thing that I know with training, you know, for 20 years, I had a judo school. Stan and I both trained custody and control for the police department. And one of the things when it comes to sports or combat sports or fighting, whatever, the fundamentals are everything. And it does put a focus on the basics. I mean, and that's one thing I used to tell my kids who I trained judo to, and even my adults, you know, they're the world champion judo player, or the Olympic champion judo player, or the world champion Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy, they all do one thing better than anybody else. And that's, they do the basics better than anybody else. And I think that applies to firearms as well. The other thing was, I've said before, you know, if you are in a shooting, if you have time to, and this is something that gets brought up a lot, sights. You know, if you're involved in a shooting, are you really going to use your sights? I mean, I never even, you know, during my shooting, I don't think I even realized there were sights on the gun, you know? I mean, you fall back on the train. But, and people say, you know, well, if you have time to use your sights, then how do you justify that? Same thing. And I've even said that in the past. But we live in a different time now. You know, back when I had first started the police department, when did the active shooter training come out, Stan? Do you remember what year?
Oh, wow.
I mean, I know it was after Columbine, but even then it was only very limited. And then it became more of, more of an immediate. Remember when they first came out with it, the officer would post up and you had to have to wait for another officer and all that. So even that has been modified. Even law enforcement training has been modified over time due to the social issues.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, because, you know, sometime after Columbine, you know, when I was on SWAT, you know, I think about, you know, initially they told officers to stand by and wait for another, you know, for the group to come in before you go in.
Yeah. And then Columbine's what changed all that.
Oh, yeah. And then now in 2019, you have the deputy sheriff that got, you know, charges brought against him in Florida for not responding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so times have changed now.
Yeah. And I think that is a something that people, I think it just renders a discussion, because I do think that people are thinking. I mean, I never used to practice, you know, long distances. And then when we went to that training, the year before last with Larry Vickers and
Latham.
Yeah, Rob Latham.
Yeah.
Then it really became more apparent to me, wow, I need to start pushing this back. You know, and the need for that. So I think there's other changes there that can legitimize that, because I know a lot of people do say that, well, there's no need to shoot that distance. But yeah, I think it's cool change, and I like this guy's site too. I pulled it up when you had mentioned that FPT.
It's FPF.
FPF training. FPFtraining.com, and looked at his history, and
he's got some great videos on YouTube. If anybody wants to check out his the ones I'm talking about are his classroom presentations.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the material, I'm assuming it's probably the same stuff that I've seen from South NARC, Craig Douglas. Steve Moses. We actually put out a an article that he was talking about, Craig Douglas's class, Managing Unknown Contacts.
Yeah.
Which to me is, I mean, man, it's super valuable because it goes back to that thing we always try to tell our members, you know, the best shooting you're in is the one that you're not there for. You know, it's like you stop it or you avoid it before you ever get there. Mm-hmm. And through using situational awareness and kind of understanding certain tactics that criminals use, and you know, there are people out there that, and I have friends of mine, I try to explain this to them, and they've never had any experience with it. But I tell them, like, look, man, you go to work every day in your office or your business or whatever it is you do. There are people in this world that every day they get up and they go out and they rob people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or they assault people. That's how they live their life, and they're mm-hmm. predators. And they understand that, you know, most times, no, you know, they don't want to fool with a hard target. Because somewhere else, there's always targets. So, mm-hmm. you know, why go after the hard target when there's a soft target right around the corner? Mm-hmm. So, and Douglas's information, and then some of what the videos that Murphy posts talks about that, indicators, you know, pre-incident indicators mm-hmm. yeah. that if you see this, and you guys, you know, with your law enforcement mm-hmm. you know, experience, I know you know exactly what they're talking about, because, you know, you could probably go somewhere in this city right now, you know, sit on a street and look around and say, okay, that guy's doing dirt. That guy's mm-hmm. doing dirt. Mm-hmm. You know, this guy's sketchy, just by, you know, indicators.
Oh yeah. That's one of the biggest thing. I mean, as a traffic cop, you're constantly looking at, you know, the breathing, the chest movement, the hand movement, the, you know, the fidgeting, the looking around. I mean, you're constantly looking at that. And I remember, Stan, you remember watching all the, you know, we used to watch videos of prisoners practicing in the prison yard how to disarm.
Oh yeah. Officers, and then, you know, I mean, and it was crazy because, you know, they would also, you know, practice and talk about or share that they should attack the officer's radio first so that he doesn't get any help, throw it away, and then mm-hmm. go with the gun. So, I mean, they're out there doing that stuff.
I mean, we used to break it down. I remember seeing the videos of, you know, how they would, hit somebody from behind, wrapping their non-gun hand,
mm-hmm.
tying it down and wrapping a leg around, forcing them to have to put their gun hand out to catch themselves as they go down, where they could immediately go to the gun.
Yep.
I remember breaking that stuff down. I remember watching it, and I remember us going onto the mats and breaking that down, how to defeat that, how to, you know, so yeah, there's people who do that. And I saw something, I was just looking for it because I just saw how many, I want to say they said there's like 100,000 criminal predators basically working in the U.S. any given day. Like Justin said, I mean, there are people that's who they are. Yeah. I mean, it's simple as that. That's who they are. And I think that, you know, for me personally, I believe that if I were to get in another shooting, I've said this multiple times, there's going to be a physical confrontation and a physical fight before the lethal fight. And yeah. That's why I continue to, you know, box and train and keep in shape and do that, because I think that, and that's why I think is so important about Craig Douglas and some of his training and some of those factors to look out for. So, yeah, I think it's interesting how training evolves, and it has to constantly evolve to what's going on around it, you know?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking back to, you know, I was listening to what Justin was talking about, you know, situational awareness and being ready, and, you know, what we are trained to do. And, you know, I have an example from yesterday, actually, in which I was driving down Hollywood Boulevard, and I see a guy on a skateboard, a young Hispanic male, and I'm at a red light. And as I stop at a red light, and he's starting to cross the street with his skateboard, but he gave me a look. So I continue to look at him. Right. And so I use all my mirrors. Of course, I use my side mirror. And I noticed when he went behind my car, because there was no cars behind me, he really hugged my car pretty tight. So then I looked to my right side and I looked out my passenger side, you know, mirror. And I saw that he squatted down, you know, near my trunk, and, you know, almost in a position where he was about to approach for a carjacking. Continued to watch. I put my, you know, I bring my foot onto my gas, and then I just kind of launch it, you know, not giving them a chance to approach my passenger side. But when I launch it, I noticed that he was still connected. So at that time, I realized that he was trying to hitch a ride on a car that didn't belong. Yeah. So once I noticed that was it, and, you know, I probably went from, you know, 0 to 40 real fast, and then I slammed on the brakes to knock him off. Well, come on, Justin, you know, I mean, this is what we do. I got to protect my stuff. So I knock him off, and then so he slides up on the side of me and kind of puts his hands up like, why'd you do that? So, you know, I gave him a certain look, but I didn't react otherwise. I just drove on. Now, you know, a lot of people would at that time engage, but I know I've already sized him up. He has on shorts, a t-shirt, and I can tell he's not printing any weapons or anything like that. He really was just trying to get a ride. He was just on the car that he should not have done that to. And, you know, but I moved on, because that too could have turned into a really serious, you know, serious situation, because I have guns in my car, you know, to handle stuff like that. And I also have knives. And it's just like, you know, did I need to engage with that guy? I said, no, he's an idiot. He learned a valuable lesson. You know, I tried to do a little bit more with the car, but I couldn't. But I just moved on. And, you know, you have to really decide when do you truly engage and when do you not. But you always pay attention, because you never know.
And Stan, was he coming from Walmart parking lot?
I don't think so.
Or was there a Walmart within the 1.5 square mile radius?
I had to look.
Number two, never go to a Walmart parking lot.
No, it wasn't Walmart.
No, that's what, yeah, and that's what's cool about this class as well, that Justin was talking about this guy being in, because you know, they're talking about that. And it's a legitimate thing to know about. Another thing I think that people really need to know about, and we've talked about it before on this podcast, is, you know, some of the things to expect to happen with you personally, mentally, emotionally, you know, if you are involved in something. And, you know, a lot of people, we talk about this stuff all the time, and we don't do it to be, we do it on purpose to be repetitive, but, you know, we want you to think of this if you are to get into something, that maybe something will snap to make you remember this conversation. Because, you know, if you are involved in something, I mean, you look at the physiological effects that people are going to go through, you know, the most common being the, you know, intense second guessing. And then, you know, something does happen, and then it's like, oh my gosh, I could have done this, I could have done that. You know, you have to realize that that's going to happen more likely than not. And that when the police are there to interview you is not the time to let that interject into your mind and say, well, I could have done this, should have done that, because then that becomes a report and a target of an investigation. So understanding all these things, you know, how to avoid a situation, but if you're forced to and have no other choice to be involved in a situation, knowing what to expect next. And that's why I think is another valuable thing with this class that he was talking about.
Yeah, it's just the whole idea. And one thing that Tyler Gray, I did some videos with him for you guys. And one thing he talked about, and it's something I've kind of always done without really thinking about it, is that trying to visualize playing that what if game. And just so it exercises your mind, so if something does happen, it doesn't shock you into inaction. You know, you can, and that doesn't mean you got to fight. It can just be, that realization that, hey, something bad is wrong here. I need to have a plan, or I need to go somewhere. You know, it's just so, you know, that inaction doesn't kind of force you down one path. So, you know, if you stand there and you're just trying to make a decision and trying to wrap your head around what's going on, every second you do that kind of reduces your options, and that, you know, now you may have to do something you didn't really want to do because you weren't prepared, you know, for something crazy to happen. But I don't know. It's, to me, that whole thing, the mindset, all of it, the training, it's all fascinating, and seeing different people with different backgrounds, how they approach things. You see some things. There's one guy that I've kind of recently started following that's really interesting to me. I don't know his last name, but his Instagram is Ed's Manifesto. This guy's story is, and I can find some more information for the description, but this guy's background is he was a police officer in Mexico along the border area for, like, I don't know, almost 10 years, I guess. But now he teaches counter kidnapping classes, hand to hand stuff, knife work. But basically, just based on his experience of seeing all the crazy stuff he saw, you know, during the cartel wars on the border, and his mindset and how he looks at things because of his experience, you know, almost a dirty war type of experience, and where violence is, it just ramped up to crazy levels that we don't really see here. There, you know, maybe very few places, but so his mindset and the way he comes at stuff is different than the way a guy who spent 20 years in soft, you know, doing raids and in teams with support, the way, you know, he looks at something quite a bit different than the way this guy does, and quite a bit different than the way maybe a guy who spent 20 years as a street cop in LA would look at things. And I think, you know, to me, the best thing for training is you try to pick and choose something that works for you out of wherever you get the information. You know, the analogy is the toolbox. You know, you take a tool for your toolbox. And so, but yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I think that'd be good to look up. I'd like to get some more information on him too. And we were going to talk about the NRA and some of the kind of the timeline thing going on recently, but I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you want, we're going at what, 50 some minutes?
Yeah, we're 56 minutes. I would say that's probably a
different discussion.
Yeah, I think it is.
I got a little too deep in the weeds on the training stuff. I apologize.
No, that's good.
No, training's important.
Yeah, and I think is, yeah, no, I don't apologize for it. I think that's great. And that's, like I said, that's your, you know, you're, you have a lot of experience there, and so you're good. Yeah, I think let's hit that on another on another day. And go from there. What do you think, Stan?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't mind following up with him, you know, before next week, and you know, make that next week's topics, and we'll just hit a bunch of hot topics.
Okay. All right. Well, guys, I appreciate it, and it's good talking to both of you. And Flint Biggie here is like he's still racked out, and I think he's doing some kind of, he's fighting somebody in his dreams here. He's like going crazy down here, messing around. But put some pictures of him online. What's that?
That's that mental imagery. You know,
visualization.
That's right.
All right, guys, you take care, man. Have a great day, and everybody, be safe out there.